Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And welcome to the SmackDown Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to look back on Friday night's episode of SmackDown. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review SmackDown, but also Monday Night Raw and NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a Bleeger quiz, of course, on Wrestling Culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review the best wrestling show of the week.
No, dear, that's wrong.
SmackDown, what did you make of it this week?
Uneven is the word I would use to describe this, and in fact most other WWE television shows. There were two good matches, let down by this weird atmosphere that receives most every WWE match on television, where it's like there's some great or very good action and the fans just aren't going wild for it. So it always affects it in some way, these crowds. And I don't want to place the blame on the crowds, it's the booking, but in response to the booking, the crowds are just, eh. There was a really nice promo segment, full of intrigue, really well performed. What I'm about to say, Wilborn, might scan as hyperbole or exaggeration or whatever. On literally every WWE show, even the very good ones, and I'm talking the pay-per-views, right? On every single WWE show, and this goes back however long you want to apply a parameter, there is always something bad. There hasn't been a top-to-bottom flawless, everything was great, let's get hyped, WWE show since Evolution 2018. Every single WWE show, even the ones that people go mad about, has something really bad, stupid, disastrous, rubbish on it. And this is true of SmackDown.
I was going to say, let's find out what it was. This week, we started with contract signing carnage. The show opened with Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, and Sasha Banks all set up to sign the contract for their triple threat match at Crown Jewel. But they weren't all in the ring. Bianca Belair was in the ring. Sasha Banks was standing on a table, and Becky was sitting in the aisle with her very own table as well. And they recapped just everything. SmackDown recaps are a regular occurrence now. It saves me so much time on the rewatch.
Because you're not goldfish. Actually, you are. You've been photoshopped and confirmed as a goldfish.
Reddit's front page, no less. So, pretty impressive.
We'll have to post a tweet for a reference underneath. The picture, yeah. We have to do it now. We've talked about it.
Becky Lynch mocks Belair for being on a losing streak. She calls Sasha Banks a disco ball. Sasha Banks says, well, I think everyone's jealous because I'm a bigger star than both of you. Everyone's talking about me. And then Belair says, well, I'm only talking about you because all you do is return all the time. And she says, look, I'm the real, you know, key thing that's the most relevant and important thing in women's wrestling today. She says, let's get on with this. Why don't you all get in the ring and we can sign the contract together? They refuse. Belair hoys one of the chairs out of the ring. This riles up Becky Lynch, who flips her table in the midst of all this, of course, because Bianca Belair is distracted. Sasha Banks jumps in, starts beating her down. There's a big brawl. In comes Becky Lynch. It's all a massive brawl. And in the end, Belair knocks both women into the corner in an amazing feat of strength, picks both of them up for the KOD. Banks slips out, but Belair spins Becky Lynch around, catches Banks with, oh, goodness me, with Becky Lynch's leg. She goes on the table, and Becky Lynch gets KOD'd through the table, through Sasha Banks, to leave Belair standing tall at the end of this segment. But no one signed a contract.
Oh, Christ, that means we're going to get another one of these next week.
Possibly.
I mean, it probably will mean that. Look, I'm a cynical guy. Contract signings are an angle, and they are designed to hook you into the upcoming match. This did that, so I'll have a few complaints about that. Solid. No complaints. Yeah, that's not why I get jazzed about this. But ultimately, that little three-way sequence was really well done. Very creative, kind of out of nowhere. Unpredictable, a nice exploration of the chemistry that they have and the things that they can do in the match at Crown Jewel, is it?
Indeed.
So that was cool. Like, the three-way spot with the table was good. I'm no fan of, you suck, I'm the best. No, you suck, I'm the best. No, you suck, I'm the best, because that just tells you three people on some level have something about them that sucks. So I'm never a fan of the way that WWE does their promos in terms of the content, the scripting, whatever. But I really liked that physical interaction,
yeah,
and that's all WWE has going for it. So if you can sort of tease how good the match is going to be, that's one thing. You should realistically strive for a real sense of like gravity and emotion and importance on the match, which I didn't really get, but the little tease of what you might see in the match itself was really, really cool, so I will give it a pass.
Yeah, I hope that's a sneak peek that we're going to get, I was going to say double team moves, but moves on two people in the, throughout this build towards Crown Jewel, because you could hit a two-person manhandle slam and you could probably hit a two-person backstabber, or it's going to suck to take it. I like that. And like you say, Bianca Belair's just feats of strength are a crutch that I happily will allow WWE to lean upon, because it's just insane what she can do.
Absolutely. Like the best, like Bianca Belair's had a sneaky good year on pay-per-view, overshadowed by how rubbish the creative's been, like laughing Bailey, can she coexist with Sasha Banks? It's all largely been quite putrid. But every one of her matches, or virtually every one of her matches, has really explored how strong she is, really creatively and really well. So I expect the triple threat to be able to do this, but much better.
It's almost like when the creative part of WWE is disconnected and they just get to the wrestling part. Hey, this is quite good.
I mean, it happens every single day in this company, and this was another illustration of that.
I love that. What's the problem here? When we take the creative away, we get these great matches that universally get praised. More scripting. That's what we need to do more of. Anyway, go to the back and, hey, Kayla is there. She is with the Mysterios. Ray's talking about winning King of the Ring. Dominic's not even in the bloody tournament. Cuh, what's he like, eh? I'll give you the brackets, actually, now. Rey Mysterio versus Sami Zayn on the left-hand side of the bracket. Or also on the left-hand side, Cesaro Finn Balor, which we'll get later on. And on the other side, we'll talk probably more about this in the Raw preview later on, Kofi Kingston versus Jinder Mahal and Xavier Woods versus Ricochet, which could mean a semi-final to the New Day. We'll get to that in the Raw preview. Anyway, so Ray walks out and Dom says to him beforehand, although I don't know, we can't hear it for some reason, he's gonna stay in the back. He's going to let his dad handle his thing out there. And Ray looks a bit befuddled, but he goes out there anyway. And just before Sammy makes his entrance after the break, he approaches Dominic and he says, I think you made the right decision. We all kind of know you're better than your dad. Trust your instincts. Good. More of that sort of thing for me. And they also showed Shinsuke Nakamura giving up his crown and made it like it's a big thing, despite the fact he never won King of the Ring. He just had a weird feud with Baron Corbin. Anyway, Sami Zayn versus Rey Mysterio. Surprise, surprise, these two work pretty well in the ring together. And also, as they make their entrances, we see that there are thrones and crowns all there for the King and Queen of the... Oh, no, we can't call it that. The King of the Ring and the Queen's Crown Tournament winner, because... Why? Okay. So, yeah, as I said, Ray and Zayn go back and forth. We've seen these two do great things together. Zayn goes to the outside. Mysterio flips over the top rope, catches him with a Hurricanrana. Zayn recovers, and as they're back in the ring, he hoys Mysterio shoulder first into the ring post as we head towards the break, and that causes Dominic to come out and check on his dad. And Pat McAfee goes full Hulk Hogan at Bash at the Beach. But whose side is he on? Probably his dad's for now, yeah. Pat. Calm down. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Anyway... Come back from the break. Zayn's going for the Huluva kick. Mysterio avoids it. Follows up with a code red. Gets a near fall off that. They're fighting on the top rope. Zayn knocks Mysterio down, but Mysterio recovers and hits a beautiful springboard Hurricanrana for a near fall. Later on, another Hurricanrana gets Zayn in position for the 619, but Zayn avoids it. Hits the Blue Thunderbomb and doesn't get the pin off the Blue Thunderbomb. Who could have seen that one coming? Zayn rips off one of the turnbuckle pads. Dominic hops up to try and fix it. This distracts Sami Zayn. It allows Mysterio to hit a senton on him. But then Ray starts telling Dominic to piss off, basically, and get down. He gets knocked into his own son by Sami Zayn. Roll up. 1, 2, 3. Sami Zayn advances. And there's the brilliant visual and hopefully, possibly the end visual, maybe even, of Sami Zayn putting on the king's cape and crown and, well, pulling it off very nicely indeed. The... more of this Mysterio's dysfunction, I suppose, here.
I can't believe I didn't think of this when we were previewing this tournament on the SmackDown preview last week. Sami Zayn can't win this. He's not going to work in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah.
I read this on Twitter. I'm thinking, how the hell have I missed that? Maybe it's my overwhelming tedium with WWE where I don't even think about it.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, so he's not going to win. He can't win. Unless they've changed their mind.
I sincerely doubt that one.
So he's not going to win it.
Cool, so Finn Balor's going to the finals.
Yeah, it would appear so.
Okay, fair enough.
Appear so. Look, I hated this finish because, like, Dominic was just trying to do a nice thing.
Yeah.
And realistically, if you're in that moment, if someone's trying to help you, it's like, cheers, son, you sort that out, I'll try and win the match because I'm in a match. And you don't think... what's he doing that for? Obviously, all right, he's helping me. That's good. I will avoid doing any attacks into that area while he helps me, my son. And he goes ballistic. And it's just like, you're in a match.
Because the Rey Mysterio is the heel of this piece. I hate to tell you all, but Dominic Mysterio is going to get a hero's reception, where he, especially from the Wilborn household. When he, in electric chairs,
oh my God,
on that ramp. And I've said it's going to be coming. I said it wasn't going to be this week. I said we're just getting there slowly but surely. And the moment that turnbuckle pad got ripped off, I was like, yes, more problems for the Mysterio family. Yes, please.
Right, before I give my brief thoughts on this match, you know you're literally a dog.
Huh?
You're a dog. We have this thing in... what culture law, the law of the office, the old office, and mercifully it's kind of coming back bit by bit, where we used to call Adam Wilborn the banter hound, because whenever there was like some kind of conversation or some laughter popping off in a different pocket of the office,
oh, yeah.
Wilborn was like, what's this? Banter, woo! He was like drawn to banter.
Yeah.
Literally like those dogs floating for pies. And I think you're not just the banter hound. I think you are a hound.
Thank you.
You've got more DNA in common with a dog than with a human being. Now, there's no scientific basis for this, but it is scientific fact. This thing with Dominic Mysterio on Ray on his shoulders, you get jazzed for this in the same way as a dog gets jazzed for, like, oh, my God. My owners are barking. It's like, it happens every day. Do you not get bored? You have this reset in your head where you can get hyped for the same things every day, like a hound.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
This match was good. Like, some of the Hurricanranas were pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Like, the way it was worked, it was like two masters. Like, even them doing a WWE-style match, but more exciting on kind of TV-level autopilot, was really smooth, really crisp, really well worked, really dramatic. It's just, again, the crowd's like, can you imagine? And again, it's WWE's biggest nemesis is itself, because for years there's been so much bad. As I said, something bad on every show. Sometimes every show's bad for like months at an end, that we're left with a crowd that just watches it quite dispassionately. And they don't go mad for things. because it's just the complexion. Like, the people who used to go crazy and be defiant and engaged in the Yes movement and all the rest of it, those are the fans that have left and watch AEW and go crazy for it with full emotional investment. So you're left now with a really kind of casual WWE crowd who will respond to certain spots in matches and go, oh, that was cool, but they're not mad into it. And that's infectious, unfortunately.
Because they know they're not going to get a proper result, let's be perfectly honest.
But the thing is, I don't think they're that bothered.
Yeah.
They just go to the wrestling show that they like, and it's not... I just feel like it's a lack of passion in these arenas in every single pocket.
Poor bastards, Channing, we want Brock. I was like, there's no way he's there this week, guys.
I don't know, if he's not advertised, he's not going to be there.
They get a promo video following this to hype Hit Row's arrival on Friday Night SmackDown, and then they have another recap segment. Save me a load of time watching this. With Seth Rollins and Edge. Kayla catches up with Rollins backstage, asks if he crossed the line a little bit by invading another person's home and saying that his children's drawings are trash.
I don't think I've ever buried the interviewer questions. That's more an Alvarez thing. He's got that one covered.
Yeah.
He hates how stupid these questions are.
Would you say they have one chance to interview these people each week and it's, what's the terminology you'd use? Maybe like wasted or frittered away.
Frittered away with a microphone. Here's the thing, when I talk about WWE being so bad that it's impossible to capture how bad it is, hence why I always do the disclaimer on every Raw review. There's no main event, it's all contrived, blah, blah, blah. There is so much bad that I just miss things, I just gloss over things that are bad about the show because they're just so known to be bad. The interviewer questions are stupid. I don't think I even bury the camera cuts in the way it's shot anymore because it's just, there's only so much time in the podcast. How do you feel about this? Oh, I was pissed off, obviously. I'm Edge. I'm pissed off about everything with my glowering.
This person killed your family and ate them. Do you think they may have crossed the line somewhat? Well, I think I was justified in my point, so yeah, no. Brilliant. Rollins says, look, that is what most people believe, that maybe he went slightly too far invading another man's house. But he said he's the bigger man and he's going to challenge Edge to determine that. He says, actually, why am I talking to you? Very accurate point. But I like Kayla Braxton. Don't be nasty to her. He says he doesn't know why he's talking to her. He's going to go and find someone with some power instead. Some sort of, I don't know, authority figures, maybe. Goodness me. And then we get the Queen's Crown Tournament, the first match in the inaugural Queen's Crown Tournament, because it's a dumb name for a dumb tournament. The brackets are Zelina Vega and Toni Storm and Carmella and Liv Morgan on one side of the bracket. On the other side, it's the new drama versus Natalia. Ooh, can't wait for that one. And Dana Brooke versus Shayna Baszler. I cannot wait for that one, to be fair. The first match is Toni Storm versus Zelina Vega and Michael Sidgwick. If someone, an alien landed and said, can you distill WWE's awful scripted promos into two sentences, I would hand them what Zelina Vega and Toni Storm said before their matches here. Do you remember this? Zelina Vega, in a little picture-in-picture, as she's walking down to the ring, says, I'm going to win this Queen's Crown Tournament. I'm going to have the heartlessness of Cleopatra and the strategic genius of Alexander the Great. Everyone's going to kiss my ring. And Toni Storm, I'm not so sure if you know this, she's a wild child of the 80s. I fucking love talking about that. Well, she's going to win it because she's got the boldness of Joan Jett. Wait a second. She's one of those music people. The tenacity of Bruce Springsteen. And the epicness of, I don't freaking know, Madonna.
Yeah. Absolutely pathetic company.
What? I can only imagine, like, the dichotomy of the person writing that and going, yeah, that's what I want them to say. Vince will love that. I hate my life. Like, because there's no way you're like, yeah, that's the line I want to write. Like, it made me sick in my mouth hearing them say these sentences.
It's just the worst scripting of all time. No one's a human being. That's it. That's my take.
And Andy Murray informed me that the two women's matches on this show, we'll talk more about the frustration of the women's division when we get maybe to the Carmella-Liv Morgan match. Both of these matches took less time combined than Roman Reigns' entrance on SmackDown this week. Tells you all you need to know.
Great watching this like on rewatch when it's on DVR. I watch Wrestling Dying. Because you just don't have to watch the entrance.
Storm, it's very brief, it's like 2 minutes. Storm initially has the advantage. Vega hits it with a Thez press. She hits a knee and slows the pace down on a 2 minute match, as I repeat myself here. Storm fights back, goes up top. Vega pulls her off. Storm goes for a backslide, but Vega hits the code red and just wins. And I was like, oh, well, there goes Tony Storm's push then. I thought like she could be a genuine contender for the Queen's Crown tournament. It's a great launch pad for her, but no. She's got to lose loads on the main roster before they can make her.
I mean, the thing is, the actual physical way in which they executed this finish was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It looked great. It looked great.
Great for a while.
Great for a while. Like, the actual Code Red deal looked awesome. But why would you do it like this?
And also, if I was an idiot who'd forgotten the last, I don't know, 10 weeks of SmackDown where Zelina Vega's won, I think maybe one match where Liv Morgan had to beat her to get that match with Carmella that she got anyway at Extreme Rules, you know, wouldn't know that Zelina Vega, prior to that match, was 0-9 since arriving back in WWE. And, you know, she was my pick for Miss Money in the Bank, for example. And then they beat her, and they beat her, and 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 then they go, she's won. There you go. Back in the game, baby.
However you analyze this, you can ask a million questions, and you'll never get answers. And all the questions are pertinent. Here's a question for you. Why was Zelina Vega in the tournament?
Yeah.
To begin with.
Well, because Naomi couldn't be in it, because I think he doesn't like her, because she's an authority
figure. Yeah, but
figure.
There's more women. What about Knox or Shotzi, considering they've got decent winning records that never arrived at the women's tag team? Yeah. I mean, like, this show is so bad. People think it's good. They don't think it's good. They are in denial. They want it to be better than it is because they are little babas. People are praising Dynamite. I'll cry my little eyes out. You just have to wank yourself to death. Have a little cry and have a little wank. I mean, the wins and losses don't matter thing has killed a lot of people's investment in this company, and it's never been more pronounced. Why am I watching it?
Do you know what? Whatever they called next week's SmackDown, Supersize SmackDown, I thought, how ironic that they're there going, hey, guys, Supersize SmackDown, we've actually booked stuff for this show. I mean, it's probably going to change at the last minute anyway, but...
I mean, how apropos that they are referring to their hollow, rubbish content churn programming after a McDonald's portion. How fitting.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, let's move on to Roman Reigns, the undisputed star of this show. Like I say, the usual extended entrance, let's say, with Reigns and Heyman.
Making good time, that's good.
get a big reaction, do all the acknowledge me stuff. And then he says, look, Paul Heyman's job last week, or this week actually, was to make sure the Usos stayed on SmackDown, and he did. So everyone should acknowledge Paul Heyman as well. And he turns to Paul Heyman, he says, I love you, Paul, but I want you to tell me the truth. There's a big Suplex City chant, and Roman says, this isn't Suplex City, this is the island of relevancy. And Reigns demands that Paul Heyman admits that he is the reason.
Tony Storm's not relevant anymore, so.
He is behind Lesnar being a free agent. Heyman looks absolutely terrified. He says, I'm in a tough position. He tries to talk about the history he's had with Roman Reigns and his family. He says, hey, I am guilty of a lot of things. As your lawyer, I would advise you to not admit that, but still. But he's not stupid. He says, look, if I was going to have some sort of scheme to trick you and actually surprise me on Brock Lesnar's side of all this, why would I, you know, release that scheme now? Why would I make that obvious now? Surely if I was going to do that, I'd just find out what your strategy is going to be at Crown Jewel and leak it to Brock and then reveal myself to be this double agent or whatever. He goes to promise Roman Reigns that, look, you're definitely going to beat Brock Lesnar at Crown Jewel. Reigns stops him with that wonderful air of menace he's got about him. He says, don't tell me. Look down that camera there and tell Brock Lesnar. And Heyman does so with this ominous Reigns standing, arms folded in the background. He says, well, the monster taught Frankenstein something here, Brock, eh? I'm going to give you credit on teaching me a lesson. He talks about Lesnar defeating The Undertaker at WrestleMania, doing all these things that many thought was impossible. But unfortunately, Heyman knows what's going to happen to Lesnar at Crown Jewel. He had this discussion years ago. You have met your match. It's Roman Reigns. Reigns is going to walk out of Crown Jewel as the champion. That's not just a prediction, Brock. That's a spoiler. And you can believe that. Really enjoyed this segment.
I really enjoyed it. Do you want to know why I really enjoyed it?
Why?
It's because one of the principles involved in this segment has got credibility behind them. It's not just watching some match where it's like, yeah, athletically it's really good and there's enough fire in there and you can tell the two guys are up for it, like Sami Zayn versus Rey Mysterio, which in the moment it's like, yes, this is an all right way to spend my time, but I can't possibly get into it. This is different. This isn't just throwing people together in a ring that you know you can work a good match. For years, Paul Heyman's been doing this prediction, not a spoiler bit. Spoiler, not a prediction bit, whatever way you want to put it. And I can take him seriously because, 99 times out of 100, everything he said came true. So when he turned to the camera under Roman Reigns' urging, Roman Reigns was, again, fantastic. Again, doing very little overtly in this segment, just conveying a massively imposing presence just with his own, like, resting state.
BDE, some might say.
Indeed. Big dog energy.
Nice.
When Roman Paul Heyman finally turned to the camera and did his promo, I genuinely felt like, well, this rules, because I'm taking everything you say seriously. Your delivery is as fabulous as it always is. And now I'm thinking, well, there can't possibly be any sort of scheming going on behind the curtain between you and Brock Lesnar, but it's rarely so simple in pro wrestling. Put simply, I was really on the hook for this. Been waiting for them to sort of say one way or the other what Paul Heyman's, where his head at, where his heart is, where his loyalties lie. He was finally, through the very credible suggestion of Roman Reigns, he was finally told, right, say it right now. Say it right now. And he did. But as I said, it's really so simple, and we know it's not. So I'm really, really on the hook for this.
Yeah, it's the
by old, far the best thing on the show.
It's the old, is Paul Heyman an agent for Roman Reigns, or is he a double agent, or is he a triple agent pretending to be a double agent, or is he a quadruple, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, it was all really masterfully done. Genuinely, it was a little bit, Jesus Christ, he's nailed his colours to the mast here. Like, really, really good stuff. The free agent thing is a little bit lame. I understand that Brock Lesnar probably is a free agent. He could theoretically lose to Roman and then just start afresh on Raw, as these things tend to go. Like, Lesnar versus Big E. Lesnar is a heel against Big E. That would rule. It'd be scary for a lot of people, but I think it would rule. So I don't know why, particularly when Roman Reigns is probably going to start bitching about Raw within like 3 weeks in the build to Survivor Series, because the whole idea is he's going to be representing SmackDown. So I don't know if he's jealous that Brock can be a free agent and go on both shows, because he's going to bury the hell out of one of these shows in about 3 weeks, or if it's just the suggestion that Lesnar's still working with Heyman in some capacity. Either way, you know, I probably shouldn't bitch about it, because they are giving themselves an out to have Roman beat Brock, or they're just giving you opportunities. They're giving themselves narrative opportunities. They're giving you, the viewer, things to think about.
Just very quickly, as you mentioned Big E there, did you see Big E's involvement with Wilder and Fury at the weekend?
Absolutely should have been doing things like this about 7 years ago.
Oh, sensational. If you haven't gone and seen that, go and check it out. He does the sort of hype piece for each fight ahead of that epic Fury-Wilder 3 fight. And yeah, like you say, hey, who knew this guy could do this?
Yeah, no.
All of us except you, WWE. Anyway, Seth Rollins goes into Postman Pierce and Sonya Deville's office. He asks if Edge is showing up tonight. And he says, you know what? I'm going to go down to the ring in the main event, if there's time, obviously, as long as Finn Balor and Cesaro wrap things up in time, presumably. And I'm gonna challenge Edge. And then he says, oh, by the way, if you see him, can you give him this? And he's taking a photo of Edge having a bit of a smooch with Beth Phoenix. What a bastard.
Yeah.
Right, second match in the Queen's Crown Tournament. It's Liv Morgan, Carmella. We've seen this match a million times. Obviously, Zelina Vega's up on one side of the bracket. It's going to be Liv Morgan's victory. Carmella puts on that mask that protects her face.
Then she goes,
ah! Yeah.
Why does she do this?
I don't know. It was horrible. Piece of material, doesn't protect your face whatsoever. That's why Rey Mysterio can lose, because, yeah, it's just material on your face. But
didn't Rey Mysterio wearing a mask get his eyeball gouged out of his head? Yes. And she thinks it's going to protect her?
Yeah. Mistake he made is cutting eye holes clearly in that mask. Otherwise, Seth Rollins would be, I was going to say blinded right now, but then Rey's got both eyes still. So it's out. What a call. Anyway, Morgan jumps Carmella immediately. They fight back immediately. Carmella actually puts her in a code of silence, makes her look like a bit of an idiot, if I'm honest. But Liv Morgan gets out of it in the babyface way of pulling at her opponent's mask. Liv Morgan hits the Oblivion. There we go. 1, 2, 3. Oh, no, wait a second. Carmella gets her foot on the ropes, blocks another Oblivion attempt, hangs Morgan up on the top rope, super kicks her, and beats her. What? What is going on here? Carmella goes through. She's going to face Zelina Vega in the semifinals. Oh, good. A heel versus heel match. This is what I want to see. And, yeah, this is a microcosm. Apparently, this was changed at the last minute. Because, of course, it was. Because the Liv Morgan advancing and potentially becoming what is effectively Queen of the Ring made the most sense. And yet, here we are. And, at best, what they're going to do is shenanigans involving either Carmella and Zelina Vega and Liv Morgan being put back in, despite the fact she was beaten fair and square here. But like I said, this is a microcosm of frustration within WWE's women's division, particularly on the blue brand, which is completely justified, I think it's fair to say.
Well, if you're Liv Morgan, you're getting tormented. There's no direction for your career. They arbitrarily change match results on a total whim. There's no focus. You're taking bumps for no reason whatsoever. Because it's not as if it's like, I mean, if you're a bit rubbish and you're taking bumps and you're a bit rubbish and they kind of tell you, they think you're a bit rubbish because they beat you all the time, you probably think, right, okay, well, that is what it is. Still getting some money. If you're Liv Morgan, you're probably thinking, like, they're actively screwing with her career for reasons that no rational, sane mind could ever analyze, because we're not dealing with one. There's no explanation. There's no purpose in watching it. And again, it's almost like there's going to be a wave of defiance, like the Liv movement. Like, that's just not going to happen anymore. No one cares enough.
The thing is, if you'd have said to me on Friday when we were doing the preview, I have seen the spoilers for this Queen's Crown tournament bracket, this side of things, and it's not going to be a babyface versus heel dynamic in the semi-final, I'd have said, great, because then we get Liv Morgan versus Toni Storm, which would be great. And yeah, and I love them, but we're getting Carmella versus Zelina Vega in the semi-finals. What?
I mean, who cares? We've already wasted enough time thinking about it.
I get their frustration, though, like you say, with not just the randomness of the booking, but also This was a minute and a half, this match. The other match was 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes at best. It's like, come on. Like 4 minutes total match time. Preposterous.
But the more you put, it's like death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
1 minute match, 1 minute match, 1 minute match. You do three of these, you ruin the performance next 6 months. This run in WWE has to be great for people to finally take someone halfway seriously.
And it's like, imagine
how often does that happen?
Imagine coming in, you're Liv Morgan going, oh, I'm losing. And I'm losing in a minute and a half because of Carmella being allegedly, as they said on commentary, protected by her mask from some offense. It's like, can I not at least get like 4 more minutes for the match to tell a bit of a story? No. We need that time for the happy talk segment that's coming in a bit where nothing was advanced whatsoever. Anyway.
Well, the best thing is when someone gets kicked in the back of the thigh, people can just go, all right, okay, well, it's all right. I'm wearing tights. Maybe that's why CM Punk wears a long boy's one. Absolute, it's just insane.
Let's get to your favourite part of SmackDown this week, and that was the interview with Mace. Here he was with Kayla Braxton talking about being drafted from Raw. She says, what do you reckon to the competition here? How are you looking to compete here on SmackDown?
I would say half the people were on Raw with me, so the same thing.
He says, well, compete implies that there is competition here on SmackDown, Kayla. I don't see anyone on my level when I looked around the locker room. I'm not coming to SmackDown to compete. I'm coming to annihilate.
Maybe there's some magical property in the blue robe that's different to the red that I don't care about anything.
Let's get to my highlight, and that was Madcap Moss cracking some jokes on Happy Talk.
Oh my God.
What instrument is found in the bathroom, Michael Sidgwick? It's a doobie toothpaste. There you go. I think Madcap Moss is pretty good now.
I think it's a complete cock.
Yeah, so we were meant to...
The way he's scripted, come on, let's not be an idiot out there. Let's not be a mark. I'm talking about the way he's scripted.
I genuinely, the first time I heard him, and they needlessly recap this segment from last week, this week, I genuinely was like half asleep watching SmackDown the other weekend. And when they went, oh, you got some jokes? And he went, I've got three jokes. It's two short ones and a long one. I thought maybe I'd imagined him saying the words, joke, joke, joke. But that happened, didn't it?
I think
that's,
so.
That's what they think. A joke is the you saying the word joke. What?
I don't know, mate.
What is comedy is my question to you.
It's not this.
No, I'll tell you what comedy is.
These nuts.
There you go.
3,000.
What the hell is that?
You don't care touch the stuff, man. Go on, what do you want to press this time?
I don't know.
Go on, press the button and see what happens. Go on, roll the dice, huh?
I'm going to do this thing, right? I'm going to close my eyes.
Okay.
Hey, that's comedy!
Five, get in. We salvaged it. Owens came out, tried to have a fight with them both, and numbers game caught up and he got the crap kicked out of him. Again!
Baron Corbin's entire WWE career can be distilled into these three things that he does. Because remember the dog on the Tron dog?
Yeah.
And it was going... It was meant to be like, yeah. The whole gag was like Roman Reigns is a little bitty dog with no walls.
Yeah. Got no cat, got no walls. You gotta be noted.
Got no cat, no balls, gotta be noted. But when he's doing that, it's a little ankle biter, come on. Baron Corbin's entire career and every feud has been to tell bad on purpose jokes, work terrifically boring matches, and lower the stock of everyone he works with. Considering the amount of television time he gets, how long his feud goes, how poor off everyone is for being around him, he might be the worst character on this television. And I hate you, Wilborn, for trying to make a meme out of Happy Corbin just because he cut one half-decent promo on a YouTube exclusive. Like Ricochet is Ric Flair a promo exclusive in terms of how good a promo he is comparison to the TV.
Yeah.
Now I get worked by these exclusive promos. My potential haunts me. Yeah, well, good line, but how much is that going to affect your career?
Naomi's backstage. She's furious about not being involved in this Queen's Crown tournament. Sonya Deville says, you're not worthy. You're not worthy of being a queen. Not even worthy of being on the SmackDown roster. Why did you draft her then? I suppose she did say it wasn't my decision, but...
Whose decision was it?
I don't really know. Don't think about this too much. Anyway.
Why would Fox and USA tell... If it is in fact there, they kind of said in a throwaway line that it was. Why would they go, well, this performance has been rubbish and these are the 15 ones. Yeah, we don't like what you've done on this show. So just go to the other one. We'll have some more people instead. Like, what does that say? Why do a draft?
They did this big draft. And I was like, it's the greatest draft ever in history. And then Naomi, when she found out that Sonya Deville hated her even more now she was still on SmackDown roster, just turned to Postman Pierce and went, oh, can you just draft me to Raw instead? Oh, so these are meaningless and can be changed at the whim of the people in power.
See, it works in sports because the whole idea is you don't have to promote people because you're not a promotion. You're a sporting franchise who wants to win. So you can let go of players because it doesn't matter that you think they're bad because the idea is you're willing to trade them and get some other people in. It's the same company. So if you're trading people and picking people last and not picking people at all, the effect of which is, oh, these are all rubbish. It's the same company, so please watch the other show. It's just all so bad.
But when she asked to move brands, Sonya Deville says...
Oh, I need a piss at this point.
Sonya Deville says she's not done with Naomi yet. She's got a match next week. Naomi asks against who? Sonya Deville says me. I mean, I am looking forward to that. I'll give him that. Sonya Deville returns to the wrestling ring, especially against Naomi, is going to be mint.
If it happens.
If it happens and if it's given enough time, I suppose. What was given time was Finn Balor versus Cesaro, the King of the Ring bracket match that came next. These two obviously just work brilliantly together. I sense that Fergal and Claudio probably did some great stuff on the indies back in the day as well. There you go, your bloody marks. You love all those old school references, don't you? Cesaro, he takes early advantage. It's this beautiful looking tilt wheel backbreaker. Gets a near fall. He's nailing him with uppercuts, but Balor comes out the corner on one attempt and hits him with a sling blade. Goes up top, but Cesaro hits him with another vicious uppercut. Superplex, near fall off that. Cesaro puts him in a crossface. Balor counters it, gets a near fall off the back of it. Again, counters the swing to get a near fall off that. Sends Cesaro to the outside. Hits this beautiful-looking flip dive out there. Shotgun dropkick as they come back in. Coup de grace. 1-2-3. Finn Balor advances. Well, to the finals, we assume, because he's facing Sami in the semis. And you pointed out, yep, he's not going to be going to Saudi Arabia. But yeah, these two great. Surprise, surprise.
Yes, but. Very good match, but. I went into it having the smallest opinion of both men. One, because Cesaro, after his WrestleMania moment and losing to Roman Reigns, it has been conveyed to me that I shouldn't care about him because the promoter doesn't either. That's always a bad thing because it just makes me not want to invest in a match because ultimately, looking at the last 2 to 3 months of his career, what's the point? Finn Balor's a fish. Who look like a tit at Extreme Rules. I don't think of him as someone who, if I watch this guy work and it's all meant to mean something because it's episodic TV, I just can't get into it. Add that to the fact that this style of match is just not something the WWE crowd really goes for, irrespective of how good it was. This is very good when it was like really pulsing with excitement. So yeah, there's always a caveat to anything that's good in this company. I tell you what, one thing that popped my tits off was Finn Balor's like crossed leg victory rule thing where he crosses his legs to escape and gets
a swing, wasn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely lush. Genuinely made me bite on the near fall. Like beautiful, great form, great athletic and endeavor, tactical mindset to do that counter. Just both of you just go to dark elevation. Not Dynamite yet, mind you, because. Them kind of, cards are stacked, brother.
It's quite busy, yeah.
I don't even know if I can put you on that card. But Dark Elevation, build your careers, your dead careers from the ground up.
You said earlier we had a contract signing with no signing of a contract. We got it here. Becky Lynch moaning to the people in power, and they went, oh, yeah, I know, but can you sign the contract? And so
can
she
you just
did.
Do your job?
So she did. And then we get to the main event with Mrs. Becky Lynch, that is, Seth Rollins, of course. He comes out. He insists that Edge comes down, accept his challenge. He says, what happened to you, Edge? And then he goes, oh, yeah, I ended you in Madison Square Garden with a curb stomp. And he says, look, Edge, you staying silent, that's just a way, your way of admitting that I'm better and you and I'm not Edge Light. He said, look, calm down, Edge. You can have any match you want, anywhere you want. I'll have whatever match, wherever you want, in the words of the other promotion. You can have it in Edge's living room and your wife and kids can be cheering you on. He said, look, you not responding is just not only disappointing me, you're disappointing the fans and you're disappointing the family. Of course, then suddenly, just in time actually, good job we didn't hit any traffic, Edge shows up backstage in his truck. Gets out, storms down to the rings. Only a couple of minutes left on this show. Rollins panics, dives out the ring, grabs a chair, dives back in. But in the time it's taken him to do that, Edge has made it to the ring. Spears Seth Rollins. They brawl around ringside. He knocks Rollins over the announce table, hoys him back in the ring and does that bit where he stomps off a bit of the chair to use it as part of the crossface. Goes for it, but Rollins elbows him in the neck and just gets out of dodge. So Edge, furious, gets on the mic and simply says, you, me, hell in a cell. And Rollins' face goes from, you know, anger and smugness and all the usual things to just sheer terror. And we get a bit of a yes chant as Edge stares him down as the show goes off the air. What did you think of this confrontation and this challenge from Edge to close the show?
I'm sorry, honest. It was inoffensive. You can't complain. I mean, you can't complain because being able to have no complaints is, in fact, a complaint of mine. You know what I'm interested in more than the storyline, like by orders of magnitude, is that, do they really want to call it Hell in a Cell in Saudi Arabia?
Well, they've already got Goldberg threatening to kill people left, right, and center, so why not?
Yeah, but over there, hell's bad and killing people's good. So maybe there'll be some kind of, like, new name.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that.
Like, maybe they'll catch wind of the fact that you can't call it that, so you'll have to call it something else. And maybe they'll come with some Saudi Arabia specific verbiage for this. There's that demons there, so I'm maybe overthinking it.
Let us know your suggestions on Twitter. I'm fascinated. I didn't even consider that they could just change it. Oh, that's opened up a whole avenue of fun for us to have maybe on this.
Save for the preview, yeah. Save it for the preview. We need content for the preview because they don't give us any content to preview.
Give us loads of matches at least for next week.
Oh, yeah, because they're trying to beat next by AEW again.
It's supersized, baby. Right, well, let us know your thoughts on this episode of SmackDown on Twitter and your suggestions for the alternative titles for Hell in a Cell. Don't do the Rage in the Cage, Pain is in Your Anus.
Don't do Heck in a Deck because it's...
I think that's... A muted word from all of us here at What Culture. Heckin, piss off.
Yeah, heckin is the worst partner ever.
Is it the worst partner ever? Could be.
I mean, I'm speaking to a literal chonk, and he doesn't like heckin either, so.
Yeah, I mean, that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
But he is a good boy.
Walkies after this? Adam Wilborn on Twitter. Where can people find you, Sidge?
Sidgwick.
Follow me. Follow us all, actually, sorry, at WhatCultureWWE. Actually, before I forget as well, if you are one of our British listeners, some great news ahead of Survivor Series. We are teaming up yet again with Top Rope Brewing to bring you a craft beer box Survivor Beeries, as we are calling it here. If you order it now, you will get it well in advance of Survivor Series. 12 beers. There's even a surprise in the box. It's this part of this Top Rope versus What Culture drinking party we're going to have. It's all to celebrate Survivor Series and Top Rope's 5th birthday. It's £45 all in and free delivery for What Culture listeners. Just you have to go in and put the code in. Here's why. This sold out last time. Unfortunately, as I said, it's just for our UK listeners. We are working to sort out a US version, but we will provide all the details for you in the tweet about this podcast. I'll stick it in the comments underneath so you can get that. But yes, go there, click on the link and put in the code Here's Why. £45 all in for 12 craft beers, which you and I know is an absolute bargain.
So just to remind me, if I wanted to hop on over and get my hands on this offer, Where would I go again?
You just go on at WhatCulturesWWE's Twitter. I'll stick a link underneath the link for this podcast. You click on that, you put in the code Here's Why if you're in the UK. Free delivery, £45 all in for 12 delicious beers from Top Rope Brewing, all ahead of Survivor Series. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. We'll be back later on today with the AEW Rampage review and the preview from Monday Night Raw. But for now, this has been the SmackDown review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.